Technically an alcoholic. Thanks for having me here. I always forget how fast that is. But my sobriety date is May 10th, 2018. I have a sponsor. Her name is Elise, and she's in Florida. And I have a home group, and that's in Charlottesville on Sunday mornings at 9:30. And it's a great meeting. And if you want more information, you can come, and I'll give it to you after the meeting. But we'd love to have you. It's called The Joy of Living. And yeah, I guess I'll just tell you, in a general way, what happened, what it's like, and
You're good.
what I was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But I guess I can start off by saying I am definitely an alcoholic. I grew up in Long Island, New York, in a crazy dysfunctional house. I grew up in AA meetings, actually. My mom is in the program, or it has been in and out of the program my entire life. And I grew up eating the cookies. I'd be hanging out in that back room there with my brother, kind of crawling all over the cabinets and putting on concerts for you guys after the meetings. And I actually remember this guy named Billy that had really, really long hair. He wore a hat, and he was so cool and always so nice to me. And I knew that AA was a safe place, and a fun place. You guys laughed a lot. You were kind of weird, but I liked it. It was a weird mix of people. But my mom didn't stay sober. It was just constantly in and out, and I didn't really understand the program. But I had a knowledge of, what about AA. And I was in Al-Anon and Alateen and all of the different, programs, I guess, for little kids, in school counseling for parents of alcoholics and that type of thing. And needless to say, I knew that there was something not only wrong with my family when I was younger, but I knew that there was something wrong with me. I really feel like I was innately just born wrong. And that sounds kind of dramatic, but I felt very disconnected from people. I felt perverted and weird, and I felt like my thoughts were so fast, and before I could even finish a thought, I'd have another one just come and tackle it. And I constantly just felt like I was on fire, even if seemingly things were okay on the outside. I was always kind of outgoing and had friends and maybe looked like I was functioning as a normal child. I had so much anxiety. I mean, to the point where every single night for years I was vomiting, every night. And I think it was they would take me to the nurse's station, they would take me to the doctors, and the doctors would say, "Oh, it's her nerves, it's anxiety," or whatever. Even more so confirming that it's her, there's something wrong with her. She's causing this. And I would go home and I would think every night, "Oh my gosh, I'm gonna have a stomach ache. I'm gonna have a stomach ache." And I would have stomach ache. And it was every single night. I would, call the cops randomly. I would just call 911. And my dad would come home and be like, "You can't call the fucking cop. You can't just call 911 operator. I went to go get milk or whatever." But I was a constant neurotic mess, looking for some kind of solution, and desperate, desperate for human connection. I really since I was little, I had a therapist call me Little Miss Kate or something, but she was hinting at I almost had this therapist-y kind of part of my personality where I wanted to connect with other people. I wanted to make people feel better, feel seen. If some a girl was sad in the corner, I kind of wanted to comfort her. But I think it was just some kind of plea for connection, with another human being. But I always felt like there was just this barrier between me and others. And I don't know if it was just because I felt so horrible about myself. It was just self-hatred. And if you knew who I was, then you would see how wrong it was. If it was fear, or I don't know what it was, but I was desperate to be loved. I think, most of us are, and to feel safe. And so childhood was crazy. My mom was constantly drinking and driving with us in the car. There were fire department at my house because she would leave the oven on, and the kitchen would go on fire. I mean, it was crazy. My parents divorced and I was six, I think. And it was just not a super stable place. And I had a younger brother that I had to take care of. And I knew that it was the alcohol that was doing this to my mom. I knew that when she was, sober or whatever, she was this life of the party. She would she was actually kind of fun. She would pull up to people on the side of the road and be like, Just like talk to them, like, what was her thing? Like, do you have any grape gum or grape poupon or whatever? She would talk to strangers all the time. She would like, she had a belly ring for like way too long and would like walk into my school, like kind of, embarrassing me and stuff. Like all my friends loved her. But like right when she started drinking, she just passed out. Like she was totally different. And, dropping knives on her feet. Like again, like just so chaotic and so, times where like I couldn't wake her up and I have some memories there. And basically I'm getting at that I knew that it was alcohol that was doing this to her. Like that was like destroying my family. And like, just causing my mom to like become this monster. And so I hated it. I would like pour it down the sink and hide it and da da da. And like, note to self, like you'd think like you wouldn't, drink alcohol if you knew like what it could do. But I guess I that didn't register because we moved from one neighborhood to another when I was like 12 or 13, and that's when I had my first drink. And I often like questioned my alcoholism because I don't actually remember my first drink like specifically. And everybody has this like magical story of when they discovered alcohol and like everything changed for them. And I can't tell you exactly when it was. I know I started like smoking weed and doing like other substances before that. And I want to say it was like a Mike's Hard Lemonade or something, but all I know is once I started drinking, I did not stop because I found that solution for myself. Like I found the thing that made me feel like I can breathe, that made me feel like I can connect with other people. Like all of a sudden I was like connecting with friends. I was able to like look them in the eye. I didn't freaking hate myself so bad. I felt like I could like be myself, even to the point where I was like, I remember like singing at a party, which I would never do before. But I like had so much confidence or whatever that like I felt like I was like life of the party. And really like even if I wasn't life of the party, even if I was just like sitting there quiet, I felt okay within my skin, which was like more than, I'd ever felt before alcohol. And so like once you find something like that, that like literally changes everything. It like puts color like in your world. It makes you feel like you can breathe and like just be a part of. I like just chased it. And so obviously you can't daily drink and use drugs and stuff when you're, 12, 13. So very quickly I was like institutionalized and in all different like outpatients and had therapists and, tried to spin it. I was very manipulative. I tried to spin it on like my childhood. And I was good at it. Like I was able to like kind of like skip classes and go to like the school psychologist and stuff. And I was able to have the principal. Like I had like late arrival, early release. Like I don't know. I really like used my sob story to just like fuel my drinking, and just to live the way that I wanted. And I stopped going to school basically in like I think like 10th or 11th grade. And so my parents sent me to a program. And I was institutionalized. Like I'd been in like outpatients and stuff, but this was like a real hardcore program in upstate New York. And I was sent there when I was 16, and I was there for from 16 to 18. And it was a little culty. There's some like documentaries about it on like Netflix and stuff now. Like it was pretty bad. We were like, borderline like traumatic a little bit, but it did get me sober. It like removed me from that environment. Like I think that in hindsight, like I should say this, like I was hospitalized, like just between, 12 and 16, I was hospitalized more than 5 times. I had alcohol poisoning a couple times. I had my stomach pumped a bunch. I had a 0.39 blood alcohol level one time. Yeah, that's really bad. My dad's like in narcotics and was like, "Kate, what the fuck? Like you could have died. Like that's not okay." I had overdosed a bunch of times, one time on Mother's Day, with like Xanax and Vicodin. Drugs are part of my story, but I used anything to change the way that I felt, but it was the way that I responded to alcohol specifically that makes me alcoholic. And so again, like, my teeth were rotting out of my mouth, my skin was jaundiced, like I was, 100 pounds soaking wet, like just a disaster. Like I am convinced that I would have died, like had I not gotten sent to this place. And so although it was like kind of crazy and they had some weird, little tactics or whatever, it did introduce me to sobriety in general. They introduced me to meetings. They took us to like outside meetings and people came in and shared their stories from like a young people's group in DC, from like some people that had graduated from there. Like they would come back and take meetings and I would listen. I would listen to like the stories and I would relate. And something else that happened was I did have like a pretty intense like spiritual awakening like while I was at this place. It wasn't like a burning bush type thing necessarily, but it was like Basically, we went on like a field trip to the city, and we went to this church, and there were like all these different people in the congregation like singing the song. And it wasn't like a normal, like, I don't know, kind of churchy hymn. It was like a, I can't believe I'm gonna do this, but it was like a God knows. And it was like everybody was singing, and everyone was like all these different, races and like just mix of people, like almost like AA. And I just felt like this like presence that I've like never felt before, just like whoosh, like, and I felt this like calm, like everything was gonna be okay. And like I felt like at one with like my creator. There's like a part in the big book that like explained it, and it's kind of like exactly how it felt, honestly. And then in that, it also goes on to say, but then it was quickly blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. And that's literally what happened. I had this spiritual awakening. And then like very shortly after, it was just back to my neurotic mess. But I will say, like, since that day, I have not questioned the existence of a higher power for me. Like, I always, like, I have a faith, whether I'm in, constant contact with a higher power is another thing. And whether like I'm, putting work into that relationship is one thing, but I haven't like questioned my faith. So anywho, that was a very positive thing that came out of getting out of that rehab. And I decided to date my best friend that I met in rehab, which I also don't suggest. That's not a great thing. But I met this guy Brian there, and he lived in Maryland. And so I was like, okay, like I'm moving from New York to Maryland to be with him, and I'll like try this like sober thing and live in this like sober house with these girls who are like in AA and stuff, and see how that goes. But I hadn't been drunk since I was 16, at that point. And so I was like, I don't really know if I'm alcoholic, but I'm terrified to like go back to the way that I was living. I know there was something wrong with me. I don't necessarily know if it was like alcoholism, but I'll give this thing a shot. Within 2 months of me moving to Virginia, he relapsed and went crazy and like started stalking me. It was like a whole thing. And I was like, shoot, like, do I go back to New York, or do I just stay and like make the most of this thing? But the group that I fell into was crazy. Like, I mean, they were like just kind of like picky. Like, they told me who my sponsor was, or like, you're gonna come over to Debbie's house, we're gonna watch this like Pilates on this TV or whatever, and we're gonna go out into India, and you're gonna ask her to be your sponsor. And I was like, oh, okay. So I just did. I just asked this woman, Debbie, to be my sponsor, and Debbie was like militant. Like, she was like really hardcore. She was like, you're coming over and doing like yard work at my house. Like, you're the one that's taking down my Christmas tree. Like, you're gonna cat sit for me when I go out of town. Like, it was like I was this woman's slave or something a little bit. Like, it was borderline kind of weird. But I did everything she said, and I just like went to these meetings and like put myself out there, and like kind of just got like sucked up. Like, my entire life just got swallowed up by this group. Like, I was living with these people. I got a job. That's how I got into dentistry. It was this girl was like, hey, you're good with kids. Like, do you want to work at this pediatric dental office? And I was like, I know nothing about teeth, but sure. Like, I'll just wing it, and I became a dental assistant, and now I'm like a hygienist, and it's kind of like my career. But like my whole job was because of AA. Like, I met my fiance like in the program, and we started dating. And my life got really, really full. Like, the fellowship really was just my entire life. The steps, not so much. Like, that's where I was lacking, was like the personal program and like that relating to like my actual experience, my alcoholism. And like, new girls would come in, and I would feel like a disconnect, almost like when before I started drinking, like that. Like, I want to connect with you so bad, but like, I did not relate to like that hopelessness that they felt. Because if I'm honest with myself, I never tried to control my drinking when I was younger. I never tried to like monitor it, or like, it was always just balls to the wall. When I get slammed, I was jumping out of cars. Like, I was just, it was insane, and I wanted it that way. Like, I thought I was invincible and was never gonna die. And so I didn't relate to those people that were like, coming in here just like so broken. And I wasn't sharing this with my sponsor. Like, I was having these thoughts and sitting in meetings and feeling like very inauthentic, feeling like a fraud, feeling like the only reason I was in AA is because all my friends are sober, and I've been doing this since I was 16. I don't know anything else. This is like what's comfortable for me. And it started to feel like AA was just like a social club for me, and almost like the hole in the donut thing. Like, who am I without AA? And so I actually convinced myself that it was this spiritual thing to do to go out and like try drinking again and give it an honest try. But I was so scared, like, when I first left, because I was like, what if I start drinking and I am just like my mom, and all of a sudden like I get a DUI like the first night, and like everything blows up, and I ruin my marriage. And I was like, I was terrified of alcohol. Like, I had like a pretty good, reason to be afraid of it. And I remember having my first drink this time. I was at an engagement party for this girl in dental hygiene school, And I'd never drank wine before. Like before, it was always like, 40s or vodka or it didn't matter. Like whatever, like the highest proof was thing is like what I was drinking, but never wine. I was never like a classy like wine or champagne drinker, in high school. So at this engagement party, they had these little glasses, like these little plastic glasses of like white wine. And I was like, ooh, like I'll try that. And I remember, like having like a couple sips of it and like feeling nice. I kind of felt that like warm, like kind of like, ooze or whatever. And like my skin felt good. I felt like a little more relaxed and nothing happened. Like my life didn't light up on fire. I didn't have another one. I just stopped after that one. I didn't get pulled over on my way home. I actually like went to a friend's house and she was drinking and instead I had ice cream. And I was like, wow, like I literally just spent all this time in AA and like for nothing. Like I wasn't even alcoholic this whole time. Like I'm so normal. This is like the best freaking news. And so right after that, I like was like, okay, like I've actually, I started craving it, I guess, more and I became like a binge drinker. So all of a sudden it was like I'm, trying to like drink on the weekends and like I'm trying to plan around when I'm drinking and like just knowing that I have a plan to drink is like making me feel like happy, not even like just the thought of knowing that it's coming and just waiting for that weekend. Because again, like I'm married to this man who is sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and like I'm not drinking at home because I don't want him to think that I am alcoholic or that, and so I was like kind of hiding it. I was a little dishonest about it. And like for me, once I start drinking, it's not only like the physical stuff, it's like when I don't have this program, actually, I don't even need to stop drinking, to be honest with you. When I'm not working this program, or at least in the fellowship or doing whatever I was doing like beforehand, like my innate self, like I just go back to how I was when I was younger. I start feeling like I'm different. I start feeling like I'm perverted. I have these weird thoughts. Like I feel like I can't connect with people. I start feeling I'm manipulative. I'm so selfish. All I freaking want is and can focus on is how I feel and what I can do to make myself feel better in that moment. Like I don't care how it affects you, or it's just all about how I feel, if I feel safe, if I feel happy, or whatever it is, it's just like it's all about me. And I start also to get like really delusional in regards to like protecting my drinking. Like I start making excuses for myself, and like slowly but surely, like I could go out and have a glass of wine with Luke at dinner and be totally fine. I could go, and have like two glasses of wine and watch The Bachelor. Like that was great. But then eventually, it was like I would start to have two glasses of wine, and then I like, decide just to have more. And then like the blackouts like start happening like more frequently. And then I like can't control it at all. Like sometimes I, can drink a whole bottle of wine and be totally fine. And then other times I would have like two drinks and be like shocked, like just totally. And I thought it was like the different alcohol that I was trying. But anyways, I also just justified it because I was like, I'm relearning how to drink. I haven't drank since I was 16. So like I need a little bit of time, to like rework up my tolerance. Like I'm a baby, basically. And so I kept trying and I kept getting more deceitful and I kept, that self-hatred was like creeping up. The shame was kind of creeping back up. All the lies between my husband, we were starting to get a little bit, he was like thinking like after we got married, or it's actually this is before we got married. I was thinking about getting married. I'll start there. And I decided to take this like cruise with my friends from work, and we it was going to be where I like really let loose. Like I really just tried to like go how I used to go, like balls to the wall, drink how I like really want to drink. And like it's so safe, you're on a cruise ship. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Now in hindsight, I'm like, you could fall off a ship. Like so many things can happen on a cruise ship, but I felt like this is a very safe, controlled space where I'm not with my husband. I'm not like, I can't hurt anybody. I can't drink or can't drink and drive. So we were just like day drinking all day with my coworkers. We met these guys. They were like super friendly. We were hanging out with them all day. It was like the night where it was like formal night and stuff. But, like, I don't know if you've ever been on a cruise, but there's like a fancy night where you like basically wear like prom dresses and get all fancy and stuff. And I remember I was so drunk, but I still like winged my eyeliner and like made it happen. Whereas my other friend that I was drinking with all day, she was like puking up everywhere and I was like trying to feed her sliders and I felt like she's a mess. Like she's the one that has a problem here. Like I'm wearing an eyeliner and she's like throwing up, I like went to the dinner and then we met up with those guys after. And the girls that I were with, like they were a little bit older, but also they just weren't alcoholic. But I thought I was like, they're just old. They were like in their 40s or something. And because the girl that I had been drinking with was my age, but she passed out, so she stayed in the room. So the 40-year-old decided to go to bed at like 10 o'clock, and I was like, "Guys, we can't go to bed. It's 10 o'clock. Like, I'm just gonna hang out with these guys that we met on the boat. Like, this is totally fine. Like, I'm just gonna keep going and keep ordering like Moscow mules. I think I was going through that phase. So it was just like Moscow mules and then gin and ginger, like just back and forth, lots of like ginger things happening. And I blacked out. And I wound up, in a really terrible situation with one of these guys. And it was not the first time this happened in my life. But this was the first time that I was engaged to be married in 2 months before this happened, to a person that I met in AA and had established this amazing foundation with. And when I tell you like how much I love my husband, like if somebody could have kept me sober, it would have been my husband. Like I'm just so obsessed with him. We've been together since I was 18. Like, we just have this. I do believe in like soulmates and stuff, maybe like multiple soulmates, whatever. We're not going to get into that. But he is 100%. Like, I've been with him in another lifetime. He is for me. And like, when this happened, just like the shame again, like just that feeling of like, you're so, what the is wrong with you? Like, you're so dirty. You're so gross. Like, how could you let this happen? And like going home and having to like, talk to him about it. And I remember when I told him, I told him what happened. He was just like, I love you. Like one thing, that happened on like a cruise, like it doesn't change like our relationship. And I actually remember a part of me being like mad that he responded that way. Like there was a part of me that was like disappointed actually that he responded that way because it meant that he still loved me and I wasn't off the hook. Like I had to like get this together. Like we were gonna stay together and I was gonna have to work on myself or I couldn't let this happen again. If he had just broken it off with me, I could have just like gone off the rails and lived that life and just like done that. But when he responded that way, I was like, shoot. And so I like put myself in, therapy and stuff. And again, you'd think something like that, something that like traumatic would maybe you'd think like second guess about like drinking again, but I didn't. Like it was again, like it was the situation's fault or whatever like the justification was. And then it even got to maybe I don't actually like love my husband that much. Like maybe we started dating too young and I was like a different person and I started making up all of these lies in my head just to be okay with like the decisions I was making on like continuing to drink, continuing to lie to him, like continuing, to like tear our like relationship apart. And yeah, the self-hate like got pretty bad and then the drinking just got worse. And I mean, it was just like copy and paste. And then eventually I went on a trip and we were doing like Zion and Bryce, which by the way, you guys, if you haven't been, you have to go to Zion and Bryce. Like talk about a spiritual awakening. Zion is the most magical place in the entire universe. Like Angel's Landing is the best hike I've ever done. It is a spiritual experience. But anyways, we had this park trip planned with like two of my girlfriends, but we flew into Vegas because Vegas is like close and we rented an RV and we like drove the RV like from Vegas. And so we had to do a night or two in Vegas. And so he was very hesitant about me going to Vegas and like knowing my drinking and stuff and like my history and was like, and I really like this was the trip that I had to prove to him that I could control my drinking. And I really meant it. Like I 100%, if you hooked me up to like a lie detector test, I would say like I am going to be responsible. I do not want to get drunk. Like I want to feel good. I want to have fun with my girls. I want to like, but I don't want to get like blackout. I don't want like something like that to happen again. Like I really just want this like to work out. And we went. And of course that didn't happen. I went. I started drinking. I found out some friends from high school happened to be there. And the next thing I know, I literally am at a strip club and I'm motorboating some stripper and I black out and I wake up and I'm in a hotel room again. Luckily, nothing happened that time, but 100% could have, but it was with friends and whatever. And apparently, my husband had my location my entire time on his phone. And he called me and he was like, if you are not on your first flight home from Vegas, like I'm out, like I'm out of the house. Like, and I was supposed to stay for longer with these other girls that were coming for the birthday, whatever. I was sad or I was scared they were going to be upset with me, but I was like, I have to go home. And like something to mention is when I went to Vegas, I took my firearm because I thought that, oh, like it's three of these girls like in an RV, like it's unsafe, like I'll just bring it, like just like, for protection, like just in case like there's some weirdo in the park or whatever that tries to try something. Meanwhile, I'd probably be like, yeah, like whatever. But no, so when we went home, I remember taking this Uber. We were all the way in Lake Anna, and I had to fly into Dulles, and that was like not like, I mean, literally, it was the longest Uber ever, but it also was just the longest Uber ever because I had these like edibles in my purse and I was like, do I take them? Like, that'll make me like maybe feel better. And I was like having this battle. And again, like, it was just the self-hatred of like, what is my life? What have I done? Like, how do I keep, like, how does this just keep happening? It's like the terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Like, it was like just all of those. And the, incomprehensible demoralization, like that just like sums it up. And I'm just like sitting in the back of this Uber for like hours just thinking about what I'm coming home to. When I came home, all of his stuff was up in the guest room, which like I knew he meant business because he was like, I mean, very loving guy. He's never done that before. He's never like slept on the couch, like that type of thing. We've always worked through it. But he moved his stuff and I was like, I felt the seriousness of like what, what I had done and had been doing. And I was unpacking. And I remember unpacking my firearm and thinking like I could just kill myself. Like he is better off. Like I'm better off, or not I'm better off, but everyone else is just better off. Like I'm so miserable. And I'd never had that thought before. I've always been more of like a runner. Like literally, like, I've jumped out of cars on highways. Like I've run away from home. I've always thought like, oh, I could just start a new life in Mexico. Like that's just where my head goes. I'm not like I'm more. I guess I'm more homicidal, but not even. Like I'm really just a runner. But suicidal, this really scared me because it was an honest thought. Like, and so it freaked me out. And I told him like the thoughts I was having, and he was like, do you think that this has to do with your drinking? And like when he asked that, I like knew in my heart, like 100, obviously this has to do with my drinking. Like, I know that I'm so mentally and emotionally and like I know there's something wrong with me other than just like how I drink. I know there's something deeply wrong with me, like spiritually. But I know that none of this would be happening if I wasn't drinking. And I just can't control it. Like once I start, like it's not that I can't stop. Sometimes I can, but I can't control when I can. It's like, like it's just like, and it always happens at the worst times, it seems like. Anytime I have like something to prove or whatever is when I really like just blow shit up. And so at that point, I called my old sponsor, Elise, who was all the way in like the DC area, and she dropped everything she was doing for me and came and met me like all the way in Lake Anna, and we like went through the doctor's opinion again, and I shared everything that had happened. It was only a year and a half that I was out this time, and like the destruction that I caused in just a year and a half is like actually kind of crazy. And like even in that time too, I like checked myself into like Karen has like this like breakthrough program, which I actually really want to do again sober. But I checked it in because I was like, maybe there's just a chance, that it's stuff I haven't worked through with my inner child or like stuff from childhood or, but that didn't fix me. Like the weekend after I went to this like really intense retreat, I was like, got so drunk, I spun off the dance floor at a cousin's wedding. And it was like, like, so I knew that like I had to go back to AA, but I just like really was not pumped about it, like at all. And when I came back, my husband actually had started a meeting in Fredericksburg, like a young people's meeting, like right by our house. And so I was able to like go to that meeting. And it felt like I was like new for the first time. Like it felt like I wasn't even sober like those last 6 years, because I felt like this time, like I 100% have conceded to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. Like I know that I belong here, and that really sucks. Like the last time it was like an option, it was fun. This time, like I don't have all these friends in the program. I don't have like we're not in the DC area anymore. Like this looks really different, and like I don't want to go to these meetings with these old people. I don't want to go to these like church basements. Like I just felt like this like part of my life or something was like over. And even more importantly, like that relief. I was like, how am I gonna like, is this gonna truly work for me now that I know that like I'm like one of you guys. But it did. And so I, started working the steps again, and I started just doing what we do here, going to meetings, getting service positions. I started, I reconnected with like a lot of my friends in the DC area and like told them about what was happening. And all of a sudden they were sending girls to me that were questioning, am I too young to be sober? And I'm like helping these girls, and like the things that I feel the most shame about, like that experience on the cruise and things like that, like those are my most useful things now that I have. Like all of those like parts of my experience and the hopelessness is like what I actually have to offer as such a gift to other people. And that's why I share those things. I don't share it to like make anyone uncomfortable or, you know, but I just want like other women especially to know that like that is what happens when you're like a woman alcoholic. And like you are not alone and like you can get through it. And my husband and I like have worked through it. And you know, with now, I mean, it's very different now. And I will also say too, I had a best friend pass away when I was like 2 months sober this time. So my newcomer experience was like very hard. It was like rough. Like I'd never really lost anybody like that. And it was completely random. She had trigeminal neuralgia, but it wasn't even, do you remember Corey Murdoch? Yeah. So she was at my house that weekend and we were on the boat and I like having so much fun. And like literally that Monday, I got a call when I was driving that she, I guess, had one of her episodes where it felt like her like face was on fire with like a blowtorch and she must have just taken more medicine and she passed away. I don't think she intentionally tried to, you know, anything, but it was just very tragic and very out of nowhere. And so to be like grieving and also so like newly sober, that was like very difficult. And then the COVID hit, like literally, like right after, I guess, because it was like 2018 when I got sober. And I got pregnant and then like COVID hit. So it was just like a weird time. But I kept doing what I was taught here. Like I gained that relationship with a higher power back. I did my fourth step, which was very similar to my fourth step and fifth step like previously. And identified those things in me and I was able to do it a little bit more like honestly. I think this time, like they say, like the truth will reveal itself. Like I think there are certain things that like I wasn't able to see the first time that I was sober because had I seen them, I wouldn't have been able to handle it. But I feel like this time, like I was ready and I feel like more will be revealed still as I like continue to work the steps. But this time again, like everything just felt way more real, way more not fun and exciting, but like way more real. And I've gotten to, you know, marry like my soulmate and we're like closer than ever. We have kids now. And I've been able to like, you know, make amends in areas. And obviously my husband is like my biggest amend. I feel like I still probably have, I always feel like I have more amends. Like apparently I don't. Like I look at my list, I always go back to it with my sponsor. I'm like, do I? I don't know why. I feel like maybe it's just like the self-centered ego part of me that like just wants to come and apologize and have you say you're doing so great or whatever. I'm like, don't I have anybody else that I can like, but I've done my amends with my sponsor. And that's the thing, like you do it with the sponsor. Cause if it was up to me, I'd probably go into everyone. And actually I was just talking to that about this with my coworkers. Bless you. I had this dentist that I worked for when I was like newly sober. And actually with that like cruise experience and stuff, he was my boss, and I kind of felt like I wanted to go back and make amends to him because I just wasn't the employee that I am now. But really, it's like when I look at it, when I looked at my sponsor, there is nothing that I have to like directly, like, you know, take responsibility for there. It was just I want him to see me in a different light, if that makes sense. And that's not what amends is about. And so that's been like an interesting thing. And you know, with the daily practice of just the whole, you know, 10 step, that's something I like really work on. I try to be good about calling my sponsor. If I'm being honest, I'm supposed to call her every Friday. I wind up calling her every other Friday. That's just kind of like the flow that we've gotten into. But I do try to sit down tonight and I try to write down like, you know, where was I resentful, honest, I mean dishonest, selfish, afraid. And I try to, you know, do that whole like 86 to 88. And something that I've been thinking about recently is like I've been very good at leaning on God when it comes to like the bigger things, like big decisions, and when like shit's really like hitting the fan. But it's like the little things. Like I have three kids, you know, four and under, and there's a lot of logistics. Like it's very busy. My husband was like recently unemployed. Like we just have like life stuff, you know, happening, and it's just like little, you know, little things. Like overall, we're fine. We're all healthy. We're all great. But like I don't lean on God when it comes to like the little daily things, even though it says like, you know, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action, or we, you know, look at the 24 hours ahead. It's like, it's supposed to be like, so, you know, broken down into like a daily reprieve and like a daily thing. And it's like, I forget I just forget. So I've been trying to pause more recently throughout my day and just say like, hey, what's the next right thought or action? Or like just take that second where I'm like connecting. And like the 11th step is so powerful to me because it's like, you know, we saw through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Because if I look back in my life, it was like I was always in contact with spirit. I was always, I think, searching actually. Like I really do think that even when I was younger, I was seeking. And I think alcohol is spirits, and alcohol actually did connect me to something higher. It did connect me to people in a way, like that, like drunk girl in the bathroom, like, you're so beautiful. And like, I really like, I freaking love that. Like, that's a high to me to feel like I'm empowering someone. Like, girl, like, do you know what I mean? Like, the drunk girls in the bathroom, I feel like you guys know. But I don't know. I like loved that. And the fact that I like have that now sober, like, I can connect with other people. I can show up as a mom and like stuff all these Easter eggs last night and get like so excited about like where I'm hiding them and like seeing their like faces light up. And like, I know that if I was drinking, I would just be like counting down the moments until, you know, they're asleep so that I can drink. Or maybe I'd be a better mom, you know, if I just had one or two to like take the edge off. Maybe I wouldn't be so neurotic or so like, and I can just see it. I can just see it. Even though like they're the most important things in my life, like I know that when it comes down to it, like the way that I love alcohol and what it does for me, I know that I would somehow justify it and I'd wind up putting it before them and I'd wind up losing them. And honestly, they would probably be better off for it because the way that I grew up, like I love my mom. And I have a lot more understanding and compassion for her since this time, like since getting sober again. But that's a relationship I've really struggled with. And like something else I've been really working on with my sponsor and in general, and this portion of sobriety and emotional sobriety is boundaries, which is something I've never had before. I think you guys can tell I'm like pretty honest and transparent. Like I'll pretty much just tell anyone anything and actually can get me in trouble at work because I just talk to everyone like they're my friend and it hasn't gotten me in trouble actually yet. But sometimes I'm like, I feel like I'm supposed to be a little more professional right now than I actually am. But whatever, I'm just myself and I try to be myself in every relationship because I wasn't like that for so long. I put on a different mask for everybody. So now this is just who you get. But I kind of forget what I was like going at with that. But I and myself, where was I getting out there? Oh, thank you, my mom. So with boundaries, that's what it is. So with having boundaries in general from the family that I come from, it's not easy because we're very like Long Island, New York, at the dinner table, like, what's your fucking problem? Like this one, blah, blah, blah. Like everyone just puts everything out there and there's lots of like there's no boundaries. So in my personal life, I've had to work with, especially with my mom and in relationships like that, making sure, like, for example, this is a different relationship, but with a friend. I have a friend that we're both busy moms. We both have like young kids. But she wants to talk to me for like an hour, like every week, actually multiple times a week if she could. And I can't do that. Like, number one, I hate the phone. I really freaking hate the phone. I only call my sponsor once every 2 weeks. Like, I'm just not a phone talker. I'll text you, I'll Instagram you, like, whatever. I just don't want to chat on the phone. I'm not like that. And two, I don't have time. I have, you know, three kids. I work full time. I have chickens and a garden and, you know, whatever. I don't have time to be like chatting for an hour. So she gets upset with me, but I don't want her to feel that she's not valued. And so I overpromise to her and I'm like, I'll be better. I'm going to change. I'm going to make this happen. Like, let's try it on Sunday. And then like inevitably I fall short. And it's like, I keep promising her something. And my sponsor, I didn't think of this on my own. This is why I have a sponsor. My sponsor is like, can you actually commit to that? Do you want to actually commit to that? And I'm like, no, I actually can't. And even if I like wanted to, I don't have time. And she's like, well, then why are you overpromising? Like, just set that boundary, saying maybe like we can have, you know, hard stop at this time, or like we can text and, you know, once a month or whatever, we can have like a long phone call and just like changing that instead of, you know, overpromising and then all of a sudden, like I'm mad at her that she has these expectations on me or something, and I'm getting like resentful. And it's like I set myself up. Like we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate seemingly without provocation. It's like I set this ball rolling. Like I have to see what my part is. And that's just like one specific relationship. But I feel like I've really had to look anytime I'm like, you know, in discomfort or feeling uneasy, or it's like that whole like spiritual axiom, like what is wrong with me, or like what can I actually do? Because I can't control other people. You can never control, you know, other people. and having kids has really taught me that you can't control other people. And that is a really very, very difficult spot for me to not have, or to have a third step is with my children. Because you are responsible for them. You know, there are decisions, there are things that have to happen. Like, you can't just eat candy all day and, you know, just do whatever they want. Like, there are certain things you have to do, decisions you have to make. But at the same time, I have to realize that even my kids have their own higher power and they are a gift, you know, they're a gift. And like, my job is just to like set them up and keep them safe and like respect that they have their own God too, you know. And that's hard for me to do. And it's hard for me to do that with everybody. Like, just accept people for where they're at. Like, that's the best they're doing. And I'm just doing the best that I'm doing. And if I can live like that, and if I can, you know, start my day with that and then like pause throughout the day when I'm agitated or doubtful and kind of like lean on that higher power, I'm so much better off than on the days that like, you know, I don't go to the meeting or I don't reach out. Like, it just gets lonely. And I know that, like, and this time I'm gonna have 7 years next month, I know, which is longer than the last time it was 6 years. And so and now I know like I have like so much more to lose this time, and I really don't want to go anywhere. And so even though like I don't normally do this, I don't really share in any of my meetings. Like, I like so this I just shared here, and then I shared at my home group actually like a couple weeks ago. But before that, like, I don't even raise my hand. Like, I need to be better about that. I need to be better about, like, you know, because sometimes I feel like the meetings, like, I get so much out of them, especially the meetings I go to. Guys, like, I'll give you my meeting schedule, but I really feel like sometimes they're like a spiritual like shot to the jugular, and then like I'm good. Like, I got mine, and then like I'm good, and I got my little Pilates after, and I feel all happy. And I, but it's like that's not really what it's about. Like, I can't just go to meetings and take. Like, I have to be of use. And so my sponsor is like directing me, like, you have to share more, you have to get service. And it's almost like I'm new again or something and have to be told. But it just looks different when I guess you have a family and, you know, things look different. But there are other ways that I could be of service. I may not have like all the time that I did when I was new, but I need to be better about like reaching out to people. And I would really love to like sponsor somebody too, because I haven't sponsored somebody since I've been sober this time. And that's something that I would really love to do. But basically, I'm just saying I'm really grateful to be here, and I hope that I get to stay here. And oh, this is random, but I remember I shared about that guy, Billy. He's still sober in New York. I went home one time and went to a meeting, and I saw him in the corner. He had no idea who I was when I first came up to him, but I was like, Billy! And the long beard, I mean, he looks exactly the same. And like, I don't know, that was what, like 25, maybe the 30 years ago. And he's still sober. And I just think that's so incredible here. Like, what we have here is so important. Like, and God forbid my kids ever need it, I know that at least one of them, my middle child, is going to need this program. And I like hope that it's here for them. So I'm glad that we have like the traditions and that you guys are here and you keep doing this. And I'm just going to continue to do my best to say yes when opportunities arise to be a service. So thank you for having me. I love this meeting. I always feel comfortable here. So thank you again, and happy Easter. Yeah.